This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Do you say and do things when drinking that you regret the next day? Is alcohol a problem for you or someone you really care about? Over the next hour, we'll find out how people just like you and me found sobriety in AA through sharing their experience, strength and hope. Welcome to AA Live, brought to you by Alcoholics Anonymous.
Kia ora, e te whanau. Welcome to the AA Live radio show. This is a show and podcast that explores the ideas behind a way of recovery through the Alcoholics Anonymous program. My name is Sue, and I thank you for tuning in and joining us from around the world this evening. Hey, I'm flying solo tonight. Mike has already done the hard work, the hard mahi, and he has put together a show for us and edited together a really great segment. So keep listening. So let's get started. Alcoholics Anonymous is a service based on alcoholics helping other alcoholics. We do the work through the 12-step program where recovering alcoholics support each other who want to stop drinking and where we learn how to live life. In the rooms of AA, by sharing and listening to the main theme of recovery by the way of the AA program, each one of us has finally come to the realization that we're no longer able to handle alcohol. Somewhere along the line, our drinking behaviors have become problematic and toxic, and that we need others to help us negotiate a way out of our alcoholic cul-de-sac. I still love that word. We do the mahi together and work through the 12 steps. But the most important thing is that we also realize that we don't try to deal with the problem single-handedly. We bring the problems out into the open with other alcoholics. We've got a really good show planned for tonight, and taking a little bit of coordination, but we're going to try a different sort of a change-up, if you like, and this is almost like the second part of where we left off last month, where we had a special show dedicated to the 63rd Annual Alcoholics Anonymous Convention that was held in Otipoti here in Dunedin. And so what we've done today, or this evening, is to split it into two parts. And the first segment contains an extended interview with one of our guests, Rita, who we had the privilege of speaking with after the international meeting on the second day of the convention. So that's coming through first. And then the second part of the show relates to a key story from the AA Big Book that Rita refers to in her conversation. And that's called The Bell Off the Bar. So stay tuned for that one, and that would be roughly about two-thirds into this hour tonight. Let's have a look. So now we want to keep to our familiar format of the AA Live program. We don't want to lose our regular listeners. So we're going to start with the daily reflection, and being the 3rd of March, this is the one that is titled Overcoming Self-Will. And so this... it's an interesting one. So the daily reflection, the books sort of start with step 3 if it is March. We might just read out the step first. So the actual step 3 is made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. So that's about the interpretation of that. So let's go back to the daily reflection. So overcoming self-will, and it starts like this. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of this selfishness. We must, or it will kill us. Anonymous, and that's from the Alcoholics Anonymous book, page 62. And it continues. For so many years of my life revolved solely around myself. I was consumed with self in all forms, self-centeredness, self-pity, self-seeking, all of which stemmed from pride. Today I have been given the gift, through the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, of practicing the 12 steps and traditions in my daily life, of my group and sponsor and the capacity, if I so choose, to put my pride aside in all situations which arise in my life. Until I could honestly look at myself and see that I was the problem in many situations and react appropriately inside and out. Until I could discard my expectations and understand that my serenity was directly proportional to them, I could not experience serenity and sound sobriety. That's quite powerful, isn't it? So just looking at, just quickly, at the heart of step three, in terms of just pushing on from that. So that step three is really based on the principles of surrender, and it's about deciding to turn one's will and life over to the care of a higher power as individuals understand it. So that's interesting, isn't it? And this step requires individuals to surrender their control and trust that this higher power, whoever that may be, whatever force it may be, will guide them towards recovery. So now, let's push on, as I promised, onto the made headline act of the show, and from our candid interview captured at the January convention, as I just previously said, tonight we have ready to go, get ready, the extended version or the EP of our time with Rita. Though our intention was to grab a smaller segment, being spontaneous as we all are, we decided to let the conversation roll and take its natural path. Now, I have had to add a small disclaimer here, as some of the parts of this audio are pretty patchy, and of course, we did digress and wander off topic at times. But hey, it's the core substance that's of importance, where one alcoholic is talking to another, and that is what really matters. So sit back and relax for precisely 37 minutes. Or maybe 37 minutes and 20 seconds, to listen to Rita's extended story of her experience, many, many strengths and hope.
We make a podcast called AA Live, and it's kind of a local service thing. So we do a monthly show, and in the, like last year, we'd have a member into the studio once a month, and just kind of share their experience, strength and hope, really. But we're kind of changing it up a bit this year, and one of the things we're doing is doing an episode on the convention. So, yeah,
nice.
We're kind of just making it up as we go along.
Yes. Yeah. Well, great. Now yep. I really want to cry.
Yeah.
I'm 63. This is the 63rd.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, right. So,
and I can't believe that I'm in a convention in New Zealand.
Yeah, very cool.
In the recording.
Yep. Yeah, so I'm recording now, by the way.
Oh, great.
Yep.
I'm just going to do up some water. It's the extra cup for God.
It's an offering.
So good. Is that what, really? Guys, I took it, I've had such a, this is my first condition.
Isn't it?
I know, I'm a young buck.
Mm. How long you been sober?
Oh, wow, 23rd of June, 2023.
Okay. That's great. That's exciting.
Well, it is exciting. It took me at least 14 years, 5 years to get sober.
Come on, Sue, you were thirsty.
Thirsty? Yeah. Oh, you had to keep going. You're thirsty. Yeah.
So how long have you been in New Zealand?
In New Zealand. I got to New Zealand. I flew in November 28th.
Yeah.
5 a.m, and by 5 p.m, I had my self-contained minivan.
Yep.
That I purchased sight unseen, but I had, you know, I'd spoken with the gentleman that was selling it, and I was ready to roll. You know, I'd gone through the insurance, the licensing, the yep. registration, the whole gambit, and I was ready.
Cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. Where was your first destination?
My first destination was the couch surfing lady's house up in Colville. And she took me to the very top of New Zealand, of the Coromandel Peninsula, to the very, very top. And she drove like she had drove those curves for 40 years.
Yeah. Fast.
Okay. Fast. And I'm like, yeah. You know, I'm looking over the edge and, you know, in Florida, we drive like this.
Straight ahead.
Flat and straight.
Yeah, yeah.
And she showed me the Christmas trees, the New Zealand Christmas trees.
Pohutukawa.
Yes. Yeah. And they were beautiful and brilliant. And Then she showed me the Widowmaker trees.
I don't know if I know.
The trees with the big roots hanging down.
The Ratter vine?
I don't know.
I'm not sure.
I don't have my my real phone. I have my New Zealand phone. Cool. My backup in case I break my iPhone.
Good idea.
Because all my pictures are on my iPhone.
So here we are today in the 63rd convention or the 80th year of AA.
Oh,
and I've just listened to you talk at the
international meeting.
And you're very compelling. Your story is very compelling. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. So what was the date? Sort of, I guess.
My sobriety? May 10th, 1994.
Yeah.
Continuous.
Awesome. And you had a few goes at sobriety before?
Well, I didn't get here one drink too soon. You know, I wasn't court ordered. I had seen my parents, you know, dig their way to hell. And
they both drinkers as well.
They were drinkers. Yeah. And I went to detox in Florida in February and was in treatment for 90 days. Rehab. I don't know what they call it here.
Yep.
And I got out, and 3 days later, I didn't relapse, but I returned to using. Because, you know, you have to have a program to relapse from, But I returned to using. But everything they taught me in those first 90 days, it's absolutely what I continue to do now.
Cool.
But when I drank that last time, it was like the...
Yeah.
It was like the... The IBI was back. The IBI is the Imaginary Bureau of Investigation.
Oh, yeah, you're right, paranoid.
And they were back immediately. I mean, I did not get any kind of pleasure out of, you know, when I returned.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just...
Yeah.
But, you know, everything that they had taught me, get a sponsor, get a home group. Find women supports that you can gut yourself like a fish to and, you know, share intimately with.
I love that. I've never heard that before.
Well,
gut the fish.
Mm. Gut yourself like a fish. You know, everything that they taught me in the 90 days of treatment, it went from here, from my head, to my heart, to my gut. And I knew beyond a doubt that, you know, something bad, if I use, I'm not going to be able to stop. You know, that I don't have an off switch. Mm. And that's what I was sharing about, you know, the doctor's opinion became true for me. I mean, it was always true, but it came alive for me. And, you know, the big book to me is like an owner's manual.
Yeah, I like
it. Tells me how to live in my body. Yeah.
So when we say alcohol, when the owner's manual, like that's the guideline, that's your the fundamental text, if we all know, but people that are listening, that's, that's the AA.
It's the big book, the literature.
It's the big blue book.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I have not, I did return to using at that point, and everything that they had taught me in those 90 days, you know, it went from my neck up, you know, I call neck up recovery. It was all in my head, you know, but I wasn't like internalizing it, living it. And when I drank that last time, it went down into my heart. I knew, you know, if you pick up, you will not be able to stop. And bad things are going to happen. And you don't know what those bad things are, but it's you've got evidence that it's going to happen. You know, so to me, that's the first step. That's the essence of the first step. It, getting honest with myself that I don't have an off switch, that... You know, that there's going to be consequences and I'm not going to be able to stop. You know, there's going to have the mental obsession and the physical compulsion and it's going to be bad. And I'm not concerned about yets. I'm terrified of agains. What's going to happen again? You know, it was bad enough the first time. I don't even care, you know, what hasn't happened yet because what's already happened is terrifying to me.
And so, again, just referencing this, listening to you in a larger room, you're the 31 and a half years, that was just great. So you're tipping over, you know, you're now more sober than, you know, and you've got the, how do we say that in the room? Like, So you got sober at 31 and a half, is that like? And then you
got sober at 31 and a half,
and now you're put the nest together, so you're 63.
I'm 63.
Yeah.
I just turned 63. But, and you know, that's a huge deal, right? But what was even more impactful for me was I used from the time I was 11 until I was 32. I used for 19 years. So, no, I was 13. I turned 13 in my first treatment center. And I used until I was 31 and a half. So I used for 19 years. When I was sober for 19 years, it was like, I'm sober longer than I used.
Yeah, that's cool.
You know, when I remember that last week out there listening to a podcast at 5 in the morning, out in the parking lot, you know, out in the driveway of a gentleman that was trying to help me. And I just, you know, I was listening to a podcast on recovery, and I was just like dying inside, you know, because I couldn't stop using. You know, I was doing a lot of things. And I'm grateful for every single pill, every single drink, every single shot, every single, because I didn't get here too soon. You know, I stayed out there long enough to hit my knees so hard, you know, to get to a bottom so hard that I just decided, you know, I'm just going to stay surrendered.
It's that kind of gift of desperation sort of stuff.
It's a gift of desperation, you know, gift of desperation, G-O-D.
Yeah, spells God, right? Yeah.
Huh? And backwards, it's D-O-G.
Yep.
I found him in a fursuit.
Yeah. Yeah, my dogs. I love my dog. My dog's a pretty big part of my recovery.
Yeah. I love them.
Let's talk about dogs. I had a dog that is now lives in London, which is fantastic. She flew over there a couple of years ago. But when my dog used to look at me, it was just like, you're not drinking again, are you? Mm. You know, you could see it almost her face. It's like, you're mad, you're crazy. Like, what are we doing now? We're like going for another walk. But, you know, we're sort of all around. You know, it's just like, please stop. And then, you know, so.
But hey.
Let's talk about dogs and now
we're trying to find my dog. I'll briefly give some dog some dogs or some dog tales. Some dog tales. I've been sober since August 26, 2024. And I was arrested it became obvious that my life was unmanageable when I thought my Uber Eats was arriving at my door, but it was like 15 police officers surrounding my house and like 5-6 police cars in my driveway. Yeah, so I thought I had things under control until that point, but yeah, I had this, so then I went, like, you know, got arrested on a bunch of drugs charges and some other things, and then ended up in the cells for a couple of nights, sobered up, straightened up, that's when I started getting sober, and then I went to court, and I got bail, and then when I was arrested, I was in bare feet, and so I was bailed out, and I had no cell phone, because they'd confiscated my phone, I had no wallet, and I was in bare feet, and I lived like 10 km out of town up this shingle road, up a hill. And so I started walking home, right? And it's like, what the f*** has happened with my life? I might have to edit that out. And anyway, I live like right beside the motorway, and there's an overbridge that goes over the motorway, and then my driveway is just off it. As I got there to the overbridge, I was just looking over the edge, and these trucks and stuff were coming past, and I was like, I could just jump, like, I could just end this all now, and like the trucks would be all over. And then my thought was, my dog's inside. Yeah, so... I didn't.
G-O-G.
Yeah.
G-O-G.
So have you been living a fairly nomadic lifestyle of late?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I started in 2022.
Yep.
I'd gone through a point in my life where everything just kind of fell, you know, all those things that society said that I needed, you know, the house, the beautiful house, the happy marriage that I met on the AA campus. Mm-hmm. You know, we were married 19 years. Mm-hmm. And he returned to using.
Right, yeah.
The career, you know, I have multiple sets of initials behind my name, and my animals, and my health, and it all just kind of fell apart at once. And I went to bed. I started binge meeting. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd go to like 4 or 5 meetings a day, mm-hmm, at 25 years sober, mm-hmm, and just sit there and just... sit with my hands on my underarms, just sit on my hands and listen and you know, God, what what is this? What do you want from me? Okay, I guess I'll do a big girl 11th step prayer and pray only for knowledge of your will, because I kind of already know, you know, and I'll pray for the power to carry it out. And so, you know, I went to bed. I was just so depressed because I didn't know how to rebuild my life. It was beyond me. And my brother was getting married and I did not want to go. And he was getting married like up in the Northeast, up in the Maine area. And it's beautiful up there. I mean, there's nothing but lighthouses all up the Rocky Coast. And I did not want to go because I was just in a pity party. I was the guest of honor in my own personal pity party. But I went, and me and my girlfriend just started, you know, driving up and down the coast, we called it hiking, but we would just stop and get out and take pictures and get back in the car and go to the next place. And I loved it. And it got me out of bed. And I, having enjoyed that, I realized, hey, you know, you can be depressed on the road, seeing beautiful things, going to AA meetings just as easily as you can at home. Behind closed doors with the windows drawn, you know, just dying inside yourself. I mean, you were dying inside yourself in that driveway, listening to the AA podcast, not being able to stop. You know, here you are sober 25 years. You know, that's no way to live. So I took my first trip and I loved it. I took the backrest of my Corolla. I took the back out of the back seat. I stuck a mattress in, I got a little cooler, and I went, you know, and I went for 10 days, and my friends thought I was crazy.
Was it the test? Was it your first adventure?
Yes. I was 10 days.
Exploration.
And I went to Daniel Boone Forest, and it was amazing. And my girlfriends asked me, you know, weren't you scared? I said, no, getting sober was scary. You know, living to be 63 is... Well, at that time, I was like 59. That's scary. You know, sleeping in my car is not scary. So I did that and I liked it. So I decided I'm going to buy a minivan. So I went from a Mustang convertible, 5.0, like a fast one.
We've got our thumbs up.
Yeah.
You can't see them. But
There's nothing like the wind and the power, you know. So I went from that to a soccer mom van, and it was like being in, you know, after being in the Corolla camping, it was like being in a mansion because I could roll over, I could sit up. So in January of 24, I went full time. I got rid of the rest of my stuff. You know, by this time I had filed for disability, or I don't know what you'd call it here, but, you know, I was told I was medically retired. So they let me retire early. And, you know, I just continued with my supports and my program and going to meetings. And little by slowly, I kept traveling. And I decided in 2024 that I want to go to Alaska. So my friends said, have you talked to your therapist? Yes, I have. I've talked to them and I know which meetings I'm going to go to. And I got to tell you, technology, I know there was a meeting on technology earlier, or the internet in AA. It's really made things much easier. You know, if I didn't have like a phone that was way smarter than me, a smartphone, I just don't know. One, I wouldn't be able to meet people on Facebook groups ahead of time. Like I'm going to Adelaide. The guy next to me is from Adelaide. I'm going to be able to stay in contact with him so that when I get there in September, you know, that I'll have connections.
You've met, from being here in Okeepoti, Dunedin, you've met
people that are in the next
kind of next adventure.
There's five ladies from Perth.
Yeah.
I'm going to get up all in their business.
Awesome.
Because I know I'm going to be able to go have bad coffee and good conversation with them in Perth. So I'm setting myself up because, you know, an alcoholic alone is in a bad neighborhood. So, you know, I still have a disease that wants to kill me, even though I've got this. When they say living beyond your wildest dreams, this is beyond anything. Well, it's more like a lost dream that's awakened, you know, because I did dream of coming to New Zealand. I did dream of going to Australia. You know, when I was before my drinking really took off. And then it was like, you know, didn't matter.
And here you are in this world, you know, today, right here with us, which has been so great. Because when you were speaking on stage, it was, this idea of this nomadic lifestyle, but also this whole idea of exploring and every day could be different. And as you said, why live in a room and try and have recovery each day when you could actually have this whole new...
Every day is a field trip, you know?
Quite amazing, I imagine, like doing the whole nomadic thing, but with an international fellowship is must be kind of special and must really make it, I would guess, a lot more feasible or, you know, a lot less lonely than it might be doing it.
Absolutely. I was in Tim's and they had a holiday gathering, and I had gone to a meeting on a Thursday night, and they invited me to come back on Saturday to the holiday gathering. And so I did. And there was a young man there that recognized my accent wasn't from, you know, the local area. And he came up and he handed me one of these and said, if you're in the South Island, if you're going to be around here for a while, here, we're having a convention. Well, I'm sitting in the meeting in the auditorium last night, and he walks right up to me and says, oh, you're from America. You made it. And I'm like, yes, thank you. And he remembered my name, and, you know, God, it made me feel so a part of, you know, not apart from, but a part of. And even though, you know, we just met 20 minutes ago, you're only strangers for 20 minutes. And then when you bump souls with people like this, you know, and you split yourself, you gut yourself like a fish and you let people see, you know, what's really going on with you. There's something really powerful about one alcoholic reaching out and helping another. And you know how they say the most important person, you know, the newcomer is the most important person in the meeting. Well, what if the newcomer has 31 years, you know?
Yeah, that's what I have been thinking about.
You don't know anyone. You're
like a newcomer.
Brand new.
Yeah.
You know, and you got to always put your hand up. Like I shared in the talk, the most courageous thing that any alcoholic can do is put their hand up and say, hey, you know, I'm floundering on my own here like a fish out of water. I need help.
I like that thought of that, you know, being able to be a newcomer as a visitor or what have you. And I like the idea of, I think when I first came in and I heard the phrasing around the alcoholic who still suffers, and I used to think that's the person that's still actively drinking, but of, you know, my understanding now is like I suffer, and like we all suffer sometimes, and we are the alcoholics who still suffer.
My nomadic shift, you know, like I'd shared, my world became very, very small when I was drinking, and AA has opened up my entire, it's like so big. Since I was able to take my recovery like really out into the world, like I had a little cocoon when I got sober. I got sober in Delray Beach, Florida. And, you know, I swore that I would never leave this little radius of two blocks around the treatment center and where the meeting met, because it met in one central location. And now, you know, it's gotten huge, international. But I don't suffer anymore. I struggle, you know, I do struggle.
Yeah.
And that's when I make myself get on the app and find a meeting and go, you know, get on a local recovery Facebook group and say, hey, where's the next convention or whatever. It's still effort.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still treating my alcoholism a day at a time, you know, and I still have to put one foot in front of the other, but I don't suffer.
Sure.
You know? Suffering was in that car in the driveway, you know, wanting to stop and not being able to, and not, you know, hearing and listening a little bit. You know, I was interested in what they were saying, but I really didn't want to give up, you know, my drugs.
Mm-hmm.
Like when I went to my first meeting, I remember what the topic was. I don't remember a whole lot of what was said about the topic, but the topic was living life on life's terms. I did not realize how much I was going to need that. You know, after I'd been sober a while, I understood exactly what it meant. But that first meeting, I didn't know what it meant, you know. I didn't know how much I was going to need it throughout my entire sobriety, because life has had ups and it's had downs, and there has been struggles and there has been suffering.
You mentioned that in the earlier meeting, and you share the highs and the lows.
Cool.
And I quite liked how, and you talked about that really clearly, the vertical and the, the bottom, the trench, did you say? Was it?
You know what? I really believe that I have not, and I don't want to ever forget that I have not hit my low. It's out there. If I pick up a drink, it's going to be worse than it was before, I had a low. I had a bottom. But in America, they say there's a trap door, When you think you've dug your way to the bottom, there's always a trap door if you keep drinking, Which is kind of contradictory to, I'm not worried about the yets, it's the agains, But I want to believe that I could always go lower. I could. Do I want to? No.
Mm-mm. Had enough.
I've had enough.
Yeah.
I stayed out there long enough to where.
Done enough research.
When I got sober, I didn't want what you people had. I didn't want to stand in a circle, hold hands, work it, like chanting. I didn't want that. But I really didn't want what I had. Mm. What I had, the story, the bell of the ball.
Mm.
You got to read that story.
So that's cool. You did mention that in your share. So that's from the third edition.
And I believe they've taken it out of the fourth edition.
Yep.
But, it's just about a girl that thought that she was, the brightest crayon in the box at the bar. And, she was her panty. I'm aging myself. Her pantyhose were ripped in the story, right? The story's got to be 89 years old, right? But, she was toothless and hairless. She probably was what you would think of a woman living in a van down by the river would look like, what you would think a nomad would look like from Nomadland, the matty hair, and I don't have to live in a van. I want to.
When I got here, the choice. Yeah.
When I got here to New Zealand, I knew. Because that's how I live in the States. I travel and I live from a van. I don't live in the van, and I just travel all.
I like that distinction.
Yes. I'm houseless.
Very, very firm about that.
I am houseless.
Mm.
I am not homeless. Well,
we have a society here that is completely obsessed with property ownership. I think it is.
Highly overrated.
Mind you, I'm in that game. That's not all about me. So I'm turning the conversation around. But we're talking about living from the van. So that's this mobile sort of life.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to understand too, how long are you going to be here for?
In New Zealand?
Yeah.
Oh, and it is wonderful. I'm going to be in New Zealand. I'm hoping I can get my visa extended so I can have the 9 months experience. Because, mm-hmm. I'll probably never come back once I go back. And I don't know when I'll go back to the States. Okay. But I want to experience it. I don't want to be a tourist. I want to experience. I want to bump souls with the locals. And so that's why this means so much to me. So probably July, August.
And then hopping, as we call it, the ditch in New Zealand. So that's the Tasman Sea.
To go back to Australia.
Yeah.
Yes.
You go over the ditch because,
Hopefully I'll be in Australia. I have an assignment for the month of September. And then maybe I'll go to Bali or Indonesia or Taiwan or Thailand rather.
Yeah.
Wherever I can go. There's good AA there.
Yeah, they're everywhere. Yeah.
We're everywhere.
Yeah, right.
And they got bad coffee everywhere.
You can do a coffee report. And also, of course, you've got, as you just said, you've got your Facebook groups. You've probably all sorts of other media platforms, whatever you want. And then online meetings as well.
Mm-hmm. And I have a home group. I have a home group that I'm still very, I talk to a lot of people from the home group, principals in practice, regularly. I FaceTime with them so they can, I can get FaceTime with them because it's important that alcoholics, you know, intimacy, we have to share intimacy, you know. And then I have a women's group. They've met every Monday for 30 years that I can stay in contact with them face-to-face on Zoom. I'm 19 hours ahead of them now, but I don't quite frequently I get the time right. Sometimes I'll like log on and, you know, and they're like, hi, how you doing? And I'm like, are we starting or ending? No, we just ended. Like, I changed time zones again.
And then daylight savings confuses things as well.
And daylight savings confuses things, yeah. But it's just been amazing. It, like I said, life beyond my wildest dreams. I would have never imagined that my God, who is absolutely crazy about me, would pick me up out of the pile of struggle and suffering that I went through at 25 years. At 25 years, you know how they say you have to let go of your old ideas? They don't say, and you got to change people, places, and things. Did you share that this afternoon about having to change people, places, and bandit?
No, I did.
Okay. Well, there were so many. I mean there's so much today.
That's a very, yeah.
So they say that, you know, when you come in, you got to be willing to change people, places, and things. What I did not hear was at 5 years, you got to be willing to let go of everything for your sobriety. Anything you put in front of your sobriety, you will lose, plus your sobriety. I never heard anyone say at 25 years, you got to be willing to let go of everything to keep your sobriety. You know, what's going to be more important? And that's where I found myself. And when I finally surrendered and said, all right, God, just mold me, whatever you want, to go from the corporate job, the corporate, you know, the briefcase, the go fast car, the big house, the multiple initials, to go from that to just a heap of humanity in my bedroom, unable to discern, you know, what am I going to do next, to a place of surrender, and then have God say, you know what? I got something for you. I got a little surprise for you. Remember those dreams you had as a kid that alcohol took away from you? I'm going to wake those dreams back up. You're not even going to have to pursue them. I'm going to put you on the path that you were supposed to be on. Yeah, we had to take a detour. We took a 40-year detour. But, you know, I'm bringing you there anyway. So,
super cool. Super special.
Excuse me?
Very special.
It's very special. I mean, this whole trip has just been so special. And the people that I've met, you know, yeah, I went to the Sydney Opera House and the Great Barrier Reef. And, you know, I'm seeing some beautiful things in New Zealand. And there's more that I'm going to see. But what's really special to me, like the highlight for me, is coming. You know, I get to tell my home group members in America, I went to the 63rd National Convention of the Alcoholics Anonymous in New Zealand.
And now you freeze.
So how loaded. So how do you like me now?
But I would really like to thank you for being here.
We
were very spontaneous, just asking. I thought, let's just go and ask. Let's just try it out.
Sue looked over at me after you shared and just was like, gotta get her.
So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks so much for sharing.
The rest of the trip around the
Can I get a selfie with you guys?
Absolutely.
Can I put it on my...
It's fine by me. Do you have a selfie with you?
Oh, yeah. Let's do that.
I have no problem with that. Yeah, that's fine.
I won't say it's with Domi.
But listen, we could keep talking. I'm just trying to do a wrap-up.
Thank you. Well, I hope you got some kind of content.
Yeah, that's awesome.
That was more than real.
And I didn't even tell you guys, I'm starting a podcast, or not a podcast, I'm starting a blog.
Wow.
It's called Right Turns with Roadrunner Rita.
Cool.
We missed it. We couldn't
I'm still right.
She's got high top tennis shoes on. She's got purple and blue and pink hair. I was very intentional with that. So it's on dealing with, it's not just travel. I've had a lot of people tell me you should do a book or a blog on your travels because I was told I was losing my eyesight. So I'm like, I need to take a look at what I'm looking at. So I started taking pictures and now I take a lot of pictures and I'm really like, I focus on seeing what I'm looking at. And I guess they're okay. But people said, you should do a travel thing. And I'm like, that's too much work 2 years ago. And so now I've got more downtime because I've changed the way. I mean, I did those four corners of the North American continent, you know, so I'm slowing down a little bit in how I'm traveling. And so I'm doing a blog and it is part of travel, but it's using travel to overcome trauma and tragedy, you know? And so Right Turns with Road Running Rita. Obviously, my name's Rita, and I used to be a runner, and now I'm a road runner. Right Turns is signifying that I may have a path that I think I need to be on, but my higher power will put a butterfly, you know, butterfly or squirrel. And so I have to be willing to take that right turn when life goes any way other than what I anticipated or I expected.
I quite like that old Yiddish saying, if you want to make God laugh, tell him your plans.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And that's, yeah, his plan. Listen, being here was not my plan. I bought a kayak and I was on my way to the Great Lakes for the summer. And I got a text, do you want to come to Australia for 9 weeks? I had to pull over. Why, yes. Yes, I do. And then make the arrangements. Within 2 days, I had my visa. Within 4 days, I had my airline ticket.
Yeah.
And within a month, I was here. My van, my home on wheels is being stored in the middle of the country at a family member's. They're going to start it for me every couple weeks. And I don't know when I'm going back. I don't know. God's got a plan. You know, I don't have to know.
And have you made any episodes of Road Running Rita yet?
It's not a podcast.
Okay.
I've done 2 blog posts.
Awesome.
You know, cause I'm old. All right. So I'm making progress, not perfection. Yes, I have.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And if people want to check it out, if our listeners want to check it out, how can they find it?
Right Turns with Road Running Rita, like 5 miles long. .com.
Okay.
Cool. Yeah. I'm working on it myself. I'm doing the formatting of the
watch this space.
Yeah. So I'm it's in progress. It's a journey in motion.
Cool. Awesome.
You know. And now if people do come, look, you know, I'm gonna have to work faster. It's kind of like when you start sponsoring people, you gotta stay ahead of them. So it makes you work your program a little bit faster.
Yeah,
a little harder, you know. Yeah. Like I got to know more than them.
Cool, that's awesome. Hey, thanks so much for sharing your time. That's
it.
Yep, correct. You got it.
And so,
yeah.
Thank you so much.
Swear with a twist and turn, I'm not the only one. Lost all I thought I needed. Back to square one. Nothing for certain now. Face plant in my palms, I can't cope. But I got to hide off already, but I know it's alright. Know it's alright. Ain't got it figured, but I stick with what I know. Know it's alright. Know it's alright.
Welcome back. That was a small interlude there, just to have that nice definition between the two parts of the show. And that was a short track by British Nigerian artist called Lulu, and the track is called Save Me. So, yeah, you're listening to the AA Live show in association with our friends from Otago Access Radio on 105.4 FM. And, yeah, I really hope you enjoyed the short or not so short interview with Rita. It really was quite an experience undertaking that interview because we just really met her 5 minutes beforehand, and I sort of raced up to her and after she had shared at the international meeting, and I said, hey, would you have a little bit of time, you know, to talk to us about, you know, why, how did you get into, why are you here in New Zealand, and, you know, what's your story? And, yeah, it went on for, we thought maybe 5 minutes, but we hit 30 minutes and then we went into 50 minutes. So that's a nice, the audio you've just heard or the interview is like a nicely sort of packaged up part of that long extended play. So now we come into the second part of the show, and this is where I wanted to read out. It's the story, and it's that Rita was referring to, and it's a nice bookend, if you like, to what she was talking about. And it's called The Bell of the Bar, and it's from the third edition of the Big Book. And that, and if you're really super keen, it's on page 478. Who knew? Otherwise, have a go if you want to, after you've listened to me reading it, to go back and you can search for that online. And a good website if you want to have a look at is Silkworth, named after the infamous Dr. Silkworth. And that contains that story and all sorts of digitized AA literature. So check that out. So here we go. And it's titled, They Lost Nearly All. And it starts like this. Waitress by day, barfly by night, she drifted down the years into jail. Then AA showed her the beauty of normal living and a whole family reborn. This alcoholic woman had been slinging hash for 18 years. She thought she was managing. She had a beat-up car that wasn't paid for. No clothes, no money, no home, no real friends to speak of. Mentally and physically pooped. And in her mind, but wasn't she doing all right? She began drinking at the age of 12 and quit at 32. She also had a pill problem, and for 2 years she was also addicted to heroin, using as many as 20 caps a day. She felt she had wasted 20 years of her life, but was fortunate not to have brain damage. After being arrested and serving 6 months on drug charges, she didn't go back to heroin. Her poor mother had three of her kids in jail that year, and two sons and a daughter. A few years later, an older brother died in a house fire because of pills and booze. She attempted suicide on several occasions because of this, making sure there was always someone within reaching distance. On one of these occasions, her brother-in-law ran to her rescue, but she wound up in a mental institution. Finally, she and her surviving siblings were all in AA, and her mother was in Al-Anon. In her story, she told of the many benefits she had received from AA. She had a happy marriage to a man she'd met in AA. He taught her that in their new life, she was the most important person of all. For her, her sobriety came before his, or even before her feeling for him. He taught her that she must help herself first. Only then would she be able to help others. She and her husband were aware of the nice things around them, things they had never noticed before in their drunken stupor. She planted her first flower garden the year that she wrote her story. She was enjoying hockey games with her husband and her brother, without being all boozed up. She went to church on Easter Sunday with her husband, and it didn't hurt at all. And it says here in brackets, and the church walls didn't tumble down. She knew that the biggest word for her in AA is honesty. I don't believe this program would work for me if I didn't get honest with myself about everything. that's in inverted commas. Honesty is the easiest word for me to understand because it is the exact opposite of what I've been doing all of my life. Therefore, it'll be the hardest to work on. But I will never be totally honest. That would make me perfect, and none of us can claim to be perfect. Yeah, so you can, it's an interesting story, isn't it? You can tell at times I was finding it hard to read it out. I guess it's a slightly different time period, you know, when this was written. I'd have to do some research to find out the exact date it was published. So that comes to the end of our show tonight, and I really hope you've enjoyed the way we've arranged it. And in terms of our closing acknowledgements, I'd really like to thank Rita, if you're listening out there, and I'll definitely be able to download it and send that through to you anyway if you're now out of the country. And thank you to Mike for really putting that work in to edit that behind the scenes. So Alcoholics Anonymous is based on a 12-step program. For those who aren't sure what that means, the 12 steps outline a path to spiritual progress through a series of actions designed to draw out a complete mental, emotional, and spiritual shift in perception. We believe the 12 steps can be a critical element, essential element of a long-term recovery plan. And just one last thing for all of our listeners, that if you want to drink, that really is your business. But if you want to stop, we can definitely help. Here are two ways to contact Alcoholics Anonymous. You can call us on 0800-2296-757 or online with the address that's aa.org.nz. And that that contains a really good extensive list of all the meeting times and locations all over the country. So if you are travelling or hopping into a centre, or I'm not sure if you're driving from Auckland to Rotorua, you know, you can go on the app or go online if you're in the area, and you can dial up and see where the meeting is on that day, and it will even give you the directions. So that's just an example how you might be able to find a meeting. Tomorrow, even if you think that you would like to venture out and test an AA meeting or join one if you're already part of the program. If you have any queries or questions about our show, then please definitely email us, and that is on aalive@aaotago.org.nz. And don't forget, you can remember. You can listen to the show if you've missed parts of it this Sunday night at 8:30. And if you're really keen, you can download the show via the ORFM website. Hey, thank you so much for being here tonight. I hope you have enjoyed everything we've sort of put out for you and for everyone listening.
And if you'll give me, then you will come back. Hold my hand and say, I still love you, and I changed my life. I changed my life. Scars have faded. I'll be someone you've got to. Not excuse when your friends come about and you'll want me always to be there. You'll be proud to say I'm with her when I change my life. I wanna play. I do. I want to be in love.
change my life. An idiot me.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.